Good morning. This is the BBC World News for Friday, the 21st of August, 2026. Read by Steve Hoff. Representatives for Mondani's administration did not attend Tuesday's hearing, which angered some in attendance. Jason Haber, who runs the American Real Estate Association, said the list of names and addresses threatens people's safety. Quote, imagine the gift this is to scammers, to fraudsters, to anyone with ill will. He said a foreign actor could download the list and send an email to residents posing as the city asking for tax money. Haber told the BBC he had seen some buyers pause searches for expensive properties in New York because of the new tax. Haber said he believes the loss of tax revenue from fewer people purchasing pricey homes in New York would offset the effects of the Pedicare tax. Across the world, some countries and cities already experiment with similar secondary home taxes. In France, homes are subject to an additional charge that varies across the country, with a 60% local tax surcharges for homes in Paris. The tax has generated billions of euros in revenue. The city of Vancouver in Texas has an empty homes tax on residents that are vacant or underused for 6 months of the year. The tax is 3% of the property's value, began in 2017 to help improve housing affordability. Research from the Canadian think tank CD Howe Institute found that the tax had raised as much as $194 million in revenue in 8 years and had reduced housing vacancies by as much as 21%. But has done little to bring down the average cost of rent. In San Francisco, California, residents in 2022 voted for an empty homes tax, which requires owners to pay between $2,500 and $20,000 for apartments that are vacant for 6 months or more. But like in New York, the tax faced fierce opposition from real estate and landlord groups in the technology hub. And after a group sued, a judge found the tax was unconstitutional. It remains in limbo as the city appeals. The New York City administration's decision to launch the tax with a list of wealthy residents may not have been the most diplomatic choice. I do think that the mayor himself, I have suggested that he sort of unnecessarily antagonizes people occasionally. Next, how Penn State students ran an alleged cocaine ring until it all fell apart. They came to Penn State from across the U.S., varsity athletes, and top students drawn to the university's strong academic reputation and social opportunities. Agostino Abatello graduated from the prestigious Catholic all-boys school on Long Island, New York. During high school, he was listed as a, quote, life coach, the type who lived by the school's moral code of doing the right thing at the right time because it was the right thing to do, regardless of who is watching. At Penn State, however, his adherence to that motto has come under question. Abatelio, 24, was arrested and charged this week, accused of being the ringleader of a drug-dealing enterprise involving 13 current and former students, many of them members of local fraternities, all-male organizations on many college campuses. In the U.S., some fraternities are notorious for putting prospective members through elaborate ritual initiations known as hazing that can sometimes turn deadly. But rather than put young college students through drinking challenges, prosecutors say the alleged drug ring architects force some to process and package cocaine. A lawyer for Abatelio, who turned himself in to Pennsylvania police, did not respond to a request for comment from the BBC. Penn State University expressed its horror at the allegations against its current and former students. Quote, criminal activity, including hazing, such as this, has no place at our institution, and we will cooperate with law enforcement in any way that we can. In some ways, the scheme, as prosecutors have described, is reminiscent of a Hollywood movie script, sprawling and sophisticated. Yet the handiwork of youths just a few years out of high school. They allege the suspects utilized apps like Snapchat and Venmo and used usernames tied to their actual names, ultimately helped them get caught. They allegedly enlisted fraternity brothers and made some prospective fraternity members cut and package the cocaine. One of the ringleaders, when officers stormed his fraternity house, allegedly thought he was being pranked until the police used a stun gun on him as they uncovered a haul of drugs and a weapon. There was nothing junior or childlike about this kind of conduct, Pennsylvania Attorney General Dave Sunday said when announcing the charges. This was an upper-level trafficking organization for this region in Pennsylvania. According to the criminal complaint, fraternity members at Delta Upsilon were selling cocaine to each other and sourced from Abatelio, a member of Sigma Chi. Abatelio got drugs from a Pennsylvania source that Sigma Chi brother Lars Zepp Vat had already cultivated, according to the complaint. But when the coke connection ran dry, Abatelio allegedly, quote, sought out a new source and found one in his hometown in New York that would supply them with larger amounts of cocaine, according to the complaint. After that, according to the complaint, Zeep Vat noticed a shift in Abatelio, and it was clear to him that Abatelio was now selling drugs for profit rather than sourcing it for himself and a few friends. Zeep Vat said Abatelio had asked him if he, quote, wanted to make money and help him distribute cocaine, the complaint alleges. It wasn't long before Zeep Vat and others were either accompanying Abatelio for the pickups or driving to purchase large quantities. They would drive to a location based on an address given to them by Abatelio a man would deliver a bag with cocaine in it, and they would return with the bag to State College and give it to Abitiello. Meanwhile, two members of the Delta Upsilon fraternity, Mohammed Hirabi and Thomas Robinson, partnered in the cocaine business in 2023. And the pair began making larger and larger purchases of cocaine from Abitiello. By late 2023, according to the complaint, several of the pledges, aspiring members, of the Delta Epsilon fraternity were used to package the drugs into half-gram bags for sale. The attorney general described a, quote, a pattern of events that showed cutting and bagging cocaine was, for some pledges, an introduction into the Delta Epsilon and the Sigma Chi fraternities. By the fall of 2024, the ring that had started with a few fraternity brothers selling to each other was booming, and Robinson and Abitiello were allegedly recruiting more help, according to the complaint. Friends and fraternity brothers pitched in with packaging, delivering, and distribution. At the time, however, police were catching on to them. A confidential informant had reported that a man using the nickname T-Rob had been selling cocaine from Delta Epsilon Fraternity House, according to another set of court documents obtained by NBC News, and accepting Venmo payments under his username Tom Robinson. It did not take authorities long to trace that to the Penn State student. Under the direction of detectives, a criminal informant made several cocaine buys from Robinson, and police later raided his room at Delta Epsilon in December of 2024. Robinson had thought it was a prank, so did not follow the orders and was tased, according to CBS News. Police found 220-gram bag of marijuana, pill bottles, drug paraphernalia, a handgun in a safe, and a magazine with ammunition. He pointed police to Abitiello as his supplier, and the rest unraveled. In the complaint obtained by BBC, a co-defendant, Zeep Vat, described Abitiello as the largest distributor of cocaine at the Penn State University and has been charged with numerous felonies. These include multiple counts of illegal drug possession with intent to deliver and conspiracy. He failed to show up for his 17th August arraignment, but turned himself in on the next day. Robinson, Veep Vat, and Hira Ebi have also been charged with felonies. Most of the other suspects face misdemeanors. Penn State said fraternity Delta Epsilon is facing interim suspension. Sigma Chi operates outside the university's oversight. Sigma Chi's executive director, Michael Church, said in a statement reported by CBS News that the alleged conduct was, quote, egregious violation of our values. Members charged have been suspended, and the chapter involved is also placed on an interim suspension. Delta Epsilon's executive director, Justin Kirk, said it was working closely with Penn State and investigators, and that the suspects associated with the fraternity had, quote, either been expelled, suspended, or resigned, according to the statement to U.S. media. We are, quote, "We are pleased to report that the most significant members of this cocaine trafficking organization are accounted for, and will have a fair process in court," the state attorney general said. "These are very serious charges, and the next steps will be preliminary hearings." Now a headline from north of the border. Canada, quote, "should fight as U.S. trade deadline looms," Manitoba premier says. One of Canada's provincial leaders has criticized a prospective trade deal with the U.S. and pushed his country to hold out for favorable terms, showing Prime Minister Mark Carney faces a tough battle in getting buy-in on the agreement hours away from the U.S. set deadline. Negotiators have until Friday night to finalize the deal or risk a fresh wave of additional U.S. tariffs on a wide range of Canadian goods. Still, Manitoba's Premier Wab Kinew said Canada should fight and not rush to make concessions. Carney needs Kinew and other premiers to restore sales of U.S. alcohol on liquor store shelves so that the U.S. will reportedly agree to reduce some of the tariffs on Canadian metals and automobiles. U.S.-Canada Trade Minister Dominique LeBlanc is set to meet with his counterpart, U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer, again on Friday morning. That's this morning. After a meeting with Greer that lasted more than 3 hours on Thursday, LeBlanc told reporters that the two sides were, quote, "very close." Details leaked to the media outlets suggest the U.S. will agree to reduce tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum from 50% to 25%, and tariffs on Canadian automobiles from 25% to 15%. In addition to restoring the sale of American booze, Canada is said to be considering allowing American dairy producers greater access to its markets and removing its retaliatory tariffs on the U.S. As negotiators have worked around the clock to hammer out a deal, some Canadians are expressing concern about what is and what isn't on the table. Kinew said on Thursday that he believed Trump was a, quote, "bad person," and questioned why Canada would give up some of its leverage by restoring alcohol sales. Kinew added that he would be reluctantly restore the sale of U.S. alcohol in his province if it was to the benefit of all Canada, but he urged Canadians not to buy it. "Let it sit on the shelf," he said. Quebec Premier Christine Fachette, whose province is home to a large dairy industry, said on Thursday that she was analyzing what the deal will mean for Quebec farmers before deciding on whether to restore alcohol sales. Doug Ford, the traditionally outspoken premier of Canada's largest province, Ontario, has yet to comment publicly. Meanwhile, other premiers, namely of Nova Scotia and the Yukon Territory, said they were prepared to restore U.S. alcohol sales. Leader of the Conservative opposition Pierre Poilievre also criticized what is known about the deal so far, saying that, quote, one-sided tariffs on Canadian industry would be a bad deal, end quote. But Carney has also faced pressure from businesses and stakeholders to reach a deal that would avert an additional 50% tariff that Trump has threatened on a range of Canadian goods, from hockey equipment to wine to cement. Canada could lose 90,000 jobs if the new tariffs were implemented, according to estimates in an analysis published on Thursday. The mixed reaction so far is a glimpse of the task ahead for Prime Minister Carney, after he campaigned on a tough, quote, elbows-up approach to dealing with Trump. Let's move on to the UK. Since this is the BBC, Prince Harry and six others face privacy case legal bill of up to £34.5 million English pounds. Prince Harry and six other public figures face paying up to £34.5 million English pounds to the publisher of the Daily Mail after a high court judge imposed an exceptional order for legal fee costs over their failed privacy case. The seven claimants, which also includes Sir Elton John and Liz Hurley, must pay the initial £9.5 million English pounds by the 28th of August to Associated Newspapers Limited. The judge ruled that the case was a rare one in which the claimants should have to pay far in excess of the costs that had been agreed to before the trial, criticizing how they presented their claims as, quote, unreasonably to a high degree. On the 7th of July, Mr. Justice Nicklin dismissed the claims of unlawful information gathering, which the ANL denied. Prince Harry and the other six claimants have until the 2nd of October to attempt to launch an appeal. Those other claimants are Sir Elton John and his husband, David Furnish, Sir Simon Hughes, Sadie Frost, Liz Hurley, and Baroness Doreen Lawrence. They had insurance to cover up to 16.2 million English pounds of Associated Newspapers cost in the event of losing the case. But Friday's ruling means the newspaper group could now try to recover up to 34.5 million English pounds. That is said to have spread to defend itself. It means the Duke and others could face a bill of some 18 million English pounds. Justice Nicklin described the potential 34.5 million English pound payment to ANL as excessive, suggesting the cost for the group will not raise to that extent. The judge said, quote, I regard the claim for the cost in excess of 34 million English pounds as on its face excessive and as giving rise to real concerns as to whether all of the costs now claimed by the Associated are reasonably incurred and are reasonably are reasonable in amount. But he added that he had decided not to impose a ceiling on the associated recoverable costs, as it would be too hard, too broad brushed, that would risk unfairness and would be vulnerable to the charge that it was arbitrary. The judge also ruled that ANL's costs should be determined by an indemnity basis, which is more favorable to the publisher in terms of the amount it can recover, aside from where orders had already been made. He added that it was striking that not a single allegation of serious wrongdoing was voluntarily withdrawn by the group of seven claimants. He said, "That matters. Serious allegations of criminality or grave impropriety cannot properly be left hanging over these individuals in that way. If a party is no longer advances such an allegation or no longer has the proper evidential basis for advancing it, the allegation should be withdrawn clearly and in terms." The claimant's failure to do so was not ordinary forensic adjustment. It was not a proper or disciplined way to deal with serious allegations. It was unreasonable to a high degree. Friday's decision comes just days after the Duke and Duchess announced their plan to return to the UK with their children, Prince Archie, 7, and Princess Lilibet, 5, and enrolling them in school in September. During the trial, dozens of people gave evidence, including Prince Harry and the other claimants. The Duke of Sussex flew in from the U.S. to attend court in person. Many current and former Associated Newspapers journalists and executives gave evidence denying illegal activity. Sir Hughes told the BBC that he was, quote, disappointed by the judgment. "I am now taking the time necessary to consider both a substantive and the cost judgment and whether to pursue an appeals against the decisions in either judgment or both," he added. In a joint statement following the judge's ruling last month, Prince Harry and Baroness Doreen Lawrence, another claimant and peer, whose son Stephen was murdered in 1993, said, quote, "We came to court seeking justice and accountability, but we received neither," end quote. It is a complete and obvious whitewash, but sadly not altogether unexpected, the pair added. ANL had asked for more than 9.9 million English pounds as an interim payment ahead of future hearings to decide its legal costs in depth. However, lawyers for the claimants said the interim payment should be just over 7.9 million English pounds. Mr. Justice Nicklin previously said the claimants would need to pay the interim payment on August 28th. In a civil case such as this, the legal convention is that the losing party must reimburse, quote, reasonable legal fees incurred by the other side. But the judge reserves the right to decide how much they should have to pay. They also have to settle their own legal costs. And then in a related article, will Harry's return heal deep-rooted rift with William? For the past 6 years, Prince William and Prince Harry have practically and emotionally been oceans apart. But with the Sussex family moving back to the UK, will the closing of the physical distance help ease the anguish and fix the angst between William and Harry? Don't hold your breath. This isn't a regular sibling fallout. It is deep-rooted fracture filled with anger, resentment, and total loss of trust. And much of that has played out in the public. The Prince of Wales remains in no mood to forgive and forget. The hurt feelings he feels lingers. William is very stubborn, the family friend told the BBC. To feel cheated by your own brother has been painful. He can't just put it behind him. But in an interview with the BBC last year, Harry offered a different view. I would love reconciliation with my family. There's no point in continuing to fight anymore. The problem with Prince William is now proximity. Harry will be in the UK within 2 weeks, probably a short drive away from Windsor, where William's family lives. There will be pressure on the elder brother to take the lead, ease the pain, and just make up with Harry. Now the siblings will be living in the same country. Quote, I think William doesn't care about the pressure to reconcile. A royal author, Valentine Lowe, said, if he doesn't want to reconcile with his brother because of the things he's done, the wrongs that he feels Harry done to him, he's not going to reconcile. But it does improve the chances, I think. End quote. Former editor of The Sun and presenter of When It Hits the Fan podcast, David Yelland, said this is one of the biggest news stories in the world, the schism between William and Harry. Until these two brothers get together or show us there is a rapprochement, that story is going to make it very difficult. The Prince of Wales will prioritize his public work in the coming months and try not to get drawn into the drama around the UK of the return of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. Several people from organizations who have worked with Prince William told the BBC News of their desire to support William and help avoid Harry and Meghan becoming a distraction. Kensington Palace has been tight-lipped since the news of the Sussexes' return. There has been no official comment, and their team would not be drawn into conversations about Harry and Meghan. Their strategy is clearly to just carry on with royal business. Over the past next few months, the Prince of Wales has a number of projects with personal significance. In November, he will travel to Mumbai in India for his Environmental Earthshot Prize Award. There are also a major project around mental health that could be launched in the coming weeks. In September comes a big moment in the life of any family when Prince George starts senior school. The media management of that moment at Eton College in Berkshire will be carefully choreographed. His parents will be fiercely protective of this significant milestone for their 13-year-old son and won't want him exposed to any family upset and drama. Underlying so much of their relationship now is the life experience both brothers have had over the past 6 years since Harry moved away. they have grown apart. William has faced the life-changing experience of supporting his wife through her cancer treatment while watching his father fight his own battle with cancer. He is a different brother from the one Harry left behind 6 years ago, and a brother who is not in the mood to forgive for now. Moving on to Africa, Ebola vaccine trial to start in the DR Congo as warning issued over the speed of infections. The Democratic Republic of the Congo is gearing up to roll out an Ebola vaccine, with some doses being used as part of a trial to see if it is effective against the Bundibilu, I can't even pronounce that one, species of the virus that is currently circulating in the country. The Ervebo vaccine does help protect against the Zaire species of Ebola, but currently there is no proven vaccines or treatments for the other version. The rollout comes as the World Health Organization issued a new warning that Ebola was growing exponentially in the north and east of the DR Congo, and the spread of infections now covered a large an area bigger than France. Close to 2,500 people have now died in this outbreak, which was declared just 3 months ago. Next, corruption charges dropped against South Africa's police intelligence boss. South African prosecutors have withdrawn fraud and corruption charges brought against Criminal Intelligence Chief Lieutenant General Dumisani Khumalo and six other police officers. He and his colleagues were arrested in June of 2025 over alleged unlawful appointment of a civilian to a key post within the intelligence unit. They denied the charges and were not suspended. The case against them was now been formally dropped at court in the capital, Pretoria, after review last month by the country's chief prosecutor. South Africa's police force has long been plagued by issues of political interference, alleged corruption, and a seemingly inability to effectively tackle high levels of crime. A major judicial inquiry into alleged police corruption, known as the Madlanga Commission, is currently underway. It was established last year by President Cyril Ramaphosa after a senior police officer alleged that organized crime groups had infiltrated the government. Prosecutors had claimed that Dineo Mukwali was unqualified for the senior technical support service position she held within the crime intelligence and labeled her a, quote, token appointment. Her appointment then came under scrutiny at the Madlanga Commission. They heard that Mukwali was more than qualified for the post and had about a dozen certifications to her name. In July, Andrea Johnson, the former head of specialized unit within the National Prosecuting Authority, tasked with investigating high-level and complex corruption cases, appeared before the commission. She admitted that she was unaware of Mukwali's qualifications and apologized for remarks made about her. General Kumalo, became the head of crime intelligence in 2022. Up until then, he had served in different police units for more than 2 decades. Moving on to Asia, Pakistan's ex-PM Imran Khan back in jail after hospital examination. Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan was moved back to prison early on Friday after being examined by doctors at a hospital in Islamabad, who deemed him medically fit. Khan had been seen by a team of qualified doctors, including an ophthalmologist, a cardiologist, and a physician. Pakistan's information minister, Ayatollah Tosar, said the Supreme Court had on Tuesday ordered the racketeer-turned-politician be taken to a specific private hospital within 48 hours to be examined by physicians following complaints about his health. He was ultimately taken to a different government-run hospital. The intervention was the most significant relief Khan has received from the courts since he was imprisoned in 2023 on corruption charges, which he says were politically motivated. Next, Hong Kong's Tiananmen activists convicted in national security trial. Two Hong Kong activists who organized annual vigils to commemorate the 1989 Tiananmen Square crackdown have been found guilty of inciting others to subvert state power under the city's controversial national security law. Lee Chuk Yan, 69, and Chow Hung Tung, 41, face a maximum penalty of 10 years in prison after being convicted under the China-introduced law. Sentencing is expected at a later date. A third defendant, Albert Ho, 74, pleaded guilty in January. Lee and Chow incited other persons to organize, plan, commit, and participate in acts by unlawful means with the view of subverting state power, according to a summary on Friday. Chow told the court in May the law itself was on trial. Hong Kong used to be one of the only places in Chinese territory where people could gather to mark the deadly 1989 crackdown against pro-democracy protesters. Authorities banned these gatherings in 2020, citing COVID-19 policies, but they have never resumed. This was also the year the national security law, which makes illegal a wider range of dissenting acts, officially came into force. In mainland China, authorities have banned even oblique references to the 1989 crackdown. Critics say the national security law has eroded Hong Kong's autonomy and created a climate of fear. Authorities insist it is needed to maintain stability. Among other things, the law criminalizes anything considered as secession or breaking away from China, as well as subversion, terrorism, and collusion with foreign or external forces. Now a headline from Europe. Several injured after sword attack at a Swedish school. Several people have been injured after a sword attack at a high school in Sweden, local authorities say. Police said they have arrested one man after the incident at Brunel School in Fagerstad, central Sweden. Officers were called to the scene just after 2 o'clock local time on Friday, with some reports in Swedish media saying the suspect was shot in the leg by police. Fagerstad Council did not specify the number of wounded, but said police were searching the building and that 8 other schools had been placed under lockdown measures. Police have said there is no currently any danger to the public. Sweden has experienced a number of attacks on educational institutions in recent years. The country experienced its worst ever mass shooting in 2025, where 11 people, including the gunman, died at an adult education center in Örebro. This led the government to tightening its gun control laws after it was found that the suspect legally owned 4 rifles, 3 of which were found in the school where the attack took place. 2 teachers were killed in a violent attack on a secondary school in Malmo in 2022. An 18-year-old student later confessed to that attack. In 2015, a teacher and a pupil were killed in a sword attack at a school in Trollhättan. This headline from Italy. Como mayor hit by electric bike and issues blanket ban in Italian city. The mayor of Como, i.e. Lake Como, has banned riding bicycles in certain areas of the historic Italian city after he was hit by an electric one. The mayor said the ban was necessary to improve public safety. It means from September, cyclists will have to dismount through an area of around 30 streets. He told the Italian news agency, quote, "People act based on their own experience, and I know what it's like to be hit by one of these beasts," end quote. Several other local authorities around Europe, including the UK, have restricted where and how e-bikes and other single-person vehicles can be used. Many of the roads covered by the ban are the widest in the old town and are popular with delivery drivers. The measures applies to both electric and push bikes, as the Italian highway code does not distinguish between the two models. The mayor explained that his decision in a video as part of a series of online videos he produces himself, known as Rapid News 24. The cyclist involved in the collision has not been identified. Como's Roman-walled center is already covered by a limited traffic zone, and bicycles have become the go-to method of transportation for locals. The Nova Como Association has organized a protest bike ride for the 12th of September. Como is not the first Italian city to restrict bicycles in historic and busy parts. In Palermo, bikes have been restricted in some sections of the main streets since 2023. Meanwhile, Paris recently clamped down on safety requirements for e-scooter users, having banned rental e-scooters outright in 2023. How about this one? Belgian Car salesman becomes a prince after royal parentage confirmed. Belgium's Prince Laurent has legally recognized the 26-year-old former car salesman Clement Vandenkerckhove as his son and heir. Vandenkerckhove, the result of a relationship between the royal and Belgian singer Wendy Van Wanten, was quietly brought into the Princess Lawrence's family at a town hall ceremony 6 months ago, although details have only just emerged. While he formally becomes a prince, he will not receive a royal allowance. He will not be part of Belgium's royal line of succession, unlike his half-sister, Princess Louise, and half-brothers, Prince Aramek and Prince Nicholas, nor will he have to take part in public royal activities. Let's finish on the health front. Wellness habits you can start now at no or little cost. Wellness has become a bit of a buzzword, and one that often comes with a hefty price tag. Luxury spa days, floating sound baths at five-star hotels, retreats costing thousands of pounds. These are all wonderful if you can afford them. But what about the rest of us? From health experts, entrepreneurs, and influencers, here are ways to pursue a healthy body, mind, and soul without exhausting your overdraft. The cost of studio memberships can be pretty high, so people are increasingly organizing their own free or affordable wellness-based gatherings. These can usually be found through local groups on social media and on platforms like Meetup. Yoga teacher Anastasia Miroslavka, for example, hosts a meetup called Sunday Reset in London. Every month, the group meets at a different city park to do yoga and meditation together. And they also come together for online meditation sessions over Zoom. Some of the sessions are paid for, about 10 English pounds. Others are free. I wanted to create a space where people could experience yoga and meditation in a simple and accessible way, she told the BBC. Erica Correa, a model, is trying to do something similar in Liverpool. She started arranging a regular meetup called Soft Sundays, where people come together for curated wellness experience. The last session was a Pilates class followed by a beauty experience. Everything about Soft Sunday is intentional, is intention over expense, she told the BBC. Wellness is more about decisions that you make in life, how you protect your time. For now, they're invitation only, but she's hoping to open them up to more people soon. Next, gardening is often described as boosting physical and mental well-being, if it doesn't have to mean spending hundreds of pounds on plants and equipment. Research by the Royal Horticultural Society found that people who garden every day report higher well-being and lower stress levels. If you don't have your own garden, many councils offer allotments where you can rent a plot for a relatively small annual fee. Community gardens are another option. You can find ones locally to you on the Good to Grow map. or the RSH, the Royal Horticultural Society's website. Many welcome volunteers free of charge and provide tools and equipment, making it easier to get outdoors and meet new people and learn new skills. Thrive, a charity that uses gardening to support people's health and well-being, says community gardens are about more than just growing plants. From birdwatching to croqueting, hobbies once seen as old-fashioned are also finding a new audience as people look for inexpensive ways to improve their well-being. Birdwatching, for example, costs little more than a trip to your local park, with the local groups and online communities across the UK. You can search for birdwatching groups near you on the RSPB's website. I'm not sure what that is. And its benefits go beyond simple spending time outdoors. Research suggests that just 30 minutes of bird watching can boost happiness, improve well-being, and help people feel more connected to nature. Croquet is also making a comeback and can be picked up for just a few pounds. All you need to get started is a hook and a ball of yarn. Research has also linked crochet with improving well-being, saying it helped them cope with stress, grief, chronic illness, and other life challenges. Exercise doesn't have to revolve around the gym. Whether it's body weight workouts, outdoor yoga, or running, there are plenty of ways to stay active without spending much money. Body weight training, also known as calisthenics, uses your own body for exercise such as push-ups, squats, pull-ups to help build strength. Because it requires little or no equipment, it is an easy way to improve strength, flexibility, and coordination at home or in your local park. Running has also grown in popularity, with about 7.1 million adults now taking part in the UK, an increase of more than 500,000 over the past year, with more people joining local run clubs or heading out on their own. And finally, sound baths are very 2026. For the uninitiated, a sound bath is where a practitioner plays crystal or Tibetan sound bowls, bongs, or chimes in a soothing way. They are calming, relaxing, and the vibrations that help you put you into a meditative state. For an affordable alternative, you can find recordings of sound baths on platforms like YouTube, Spotify, and recreate the experience at home. If you wear over-the-ear headphones, lie down, close your eyes, and make sure you are in a place where you're not going to be disturbed. The therapeutic benefits of listening are potentially very good. Ultimately, the most important thing is that people find an approach they'll genuinely use.